If you look at a polished steel beam or maybe a titanium plate,
Or really any highly machined metal surface.
yeah, exactly. Your brain just makes this immediate subconscious assumption about it. You just assume absolute uniformity.
Right, you see a solid, continuous block of matter.
Exactly. There are no gaps, no moving parts. It just presents itself as this, monolithic structure.
Which is an incredibly persistent optical illusion, really.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because our human vision is limited to the macro scale, right? So we naturally just equate a smooth surface with internal simplicity. We assume that if we were to shrink down and look inside that metal, it would just look like, more of the same, just repeating infinitely.
Right. But the moment you actually step into the world of modern material science or metallurgy, that illusion completely shatters.
Oh, absolutely.
Because when you zoom in far enough, a simple piece of metal reveals itself to be this like chaotic, highly complex, three-dimensional puzzle of distinct microscopic grains.
It's a whole hidden world.
It really is. And today, we are taking a deep dive into exactly how scientists deconstruct and visualize that hidden reality. We're working with a really fascinating source text today from HKDH Padacia.
Yes, they are affiliated with Queen Mary University of London and the University of Cambridge.
Right. And our mission for you today is to explore the mechanics behind these incredibly precise tools. We're going to examine how researchers literally tear a material apart, basically atom by atom, just to map the building blocks of the modern world.
Yeah, the source material focuses on the three-dimensional grain structure of a very specific nickel-based superalloy.
Which we'll get into.
Right. It's a pretty dense text, honestly, but it provides this remarkable window into the physical lengths researchers have to go to and the sci-fi sounding tools they have to use just to accurately define what a single grain of metal actually looks like.
Yeah, and the text begins by tackling this really fundamental problem. How do you look inside something that is completely opaque and completely solid?
Right, because you can't exactly just slice a microscopic sample with a tiny little mechanical saw.
No, you can't. Instead, the text states that a quote, appropriate beam of ions can be used to accurately machine samples.
Which is, a very elegant way of describing a process that is essentially controlled atomic destruction.
Okay, let's unpack this because the text is very specific about the mechanism here. It says they create a sharp tip of liquid gallium, and then they apply an electrical field to cause the emission of gallium ions. And they direct those ions to hit the sample and remove material.
Yep.
I really want to break down the physics of this first, because the concept of a liquid tip sounds almost contradictory when we're talking about extreme precision machining.
It does sound a bit counterintuitive.
Right. I mean, how does an electric field pull a liquid into a sharp tip without just splashing it everywhere?
Well, it basically comes down to a battle between surface tension and electrostatic force.
Okay.
So you have a reservoir of liquid gallium, which, by the way, is a metal that melts at near room temperature.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And when you apply a really strong electrical field to it, that field actually physically pulls on the liquid metal.
It cools it.
Yeah, it stretches the surface of the gallium, constantly fighting against the liquid's natural surface tension, and it pulls it until it deforms into this incredibly fine microscopic cone.
So the electrical field is literally suspending and shaping the liquid into like a needle.
Precisely. And because it's a liquid, the tip can become unimaginably sharp. I mean, sometimes narrowing down to the width of just a few atoms at the very apex.
That is wild.
And once that cone is formed, the electrical field is strong enough to start ripping individual gallium ions right off the tip.
And just accelerating them toward the metal sample.
Exactly.
Okay, so is this basically a microscopic deli meat slicer, or is it more like an atomic sandblaster?
I'd say the atomic sandblaster is a very accurate way to visualize it
Okay.
because, gallium is a relatively heavy element. So when you accelerate a heavy ion using an electrical field and slam it into a metal surface, it's a huge kinetic transfer of energy.
Exactly. It hits the surface atoms of the sample like a wrecking ball. It physically ejects them from the structure. So by sweeping this beam back and forth, you can mill away the surface of the metal with nanoscale precision.
Okay, that makes sense for removing material, but I feel like it presents an obvious logical problem.
Which is?
Well, if you are sandblasting the sample away layer by layer, you're destroying it.
Right.
So how are you actually supposed to see the structure you're studying if you're vaporizing it?
And that is exactly the genius of this particular tool. The destruction itself is actually what powers the observation.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The text notes a crucial secondary effect of this milling process. When those heavy gallium ions slam into the sample and blast the material away, the kinetic impact also causes the emission of secondary electrons from the sample itself.
Meaning the impact knocks electrons out of their orbits in the metal sample.
Yes, exactly. The collision ejects these low-energy secondary electrons away from the surface. And here is where the imaging actually happens. The system is equipped with a detector specifically designed to capture those escaping electrons.
Oh!
Yeah, this is the fundamental mechanism of a scanning electron microscope, or an SM.
So we're mapping the surface just by counting the electrons bouncing off of it.
Yep.
But how does just counting electrons translate into a visual picture of a physical structure? Like, how does that become an image?
Well, because the geometry of the surface actually dictates how many electrons can escape and reach the detector.
How so?
So imagine a perfectly flat plateau on the metal surface. When the ion beam hits it, a certain baseline number of secondary electrons are ejected straight up and caught by the detector.
Okay, that makes sense.
But now imagine the beam hits a sharp microscopic ridge, or, you know, the steep edge of a grain.
Right.
At an edge, electrons can escape from the top, but also from the sides.
Ah, so edges and slopes release more electrons than flat surfaces.
Exactly. The detector registers a sudden spike in the number of electrons coming from that specific ridge, and then a computer translates that spike into a brighter pixel on a screen.
Wow.
Yeah. So flat areas look gray, deep crevices look really dark because fewer electrons make it out, and the sharp ridges look bright white.
So the topographical map essentially draws itself based on this electron topography.
It really does.
The exact tool used to destroy the metal is simultaneously the lens used to photograph it.
It's an incredibly brilliant piece of engineering.
It is. So, okay, now that we understand the camera, we need to look at what they are actually pointing it at.
Right.
The text shifts focus to the specific research of Michael Uchik from the Air Force Research Laboratories.
Yes, Uchik.
And he is using this exact liquid gallium ion process to investigate a nickel-based superalloy.
And this is really where the sheer complexity of material science becomes apparent. Uchik is investigating a specific superalloy designated as IN100.
Yeah, and the text actually provides the nominal chemical composition for IN100, and I'm going to read that entirely because I think the sheer mathematics of it are just critical to understanding why this research is necessary.
Go for it. Okay, the composition is nickel minus 17.1 cobalt, 13 chromium, 10 aluminum, 1.82 molybdenum, 4.93 titanium, 0.84 vanadium, 0.1 boron, 0.31 carbon, and 0.034 zirconium.
It's quite the list.
It's an alphabet soup. And the text specifies this is in, quote, atomic percent.
Which is a very important distinction to make.
Right.
They aren't measuring this by weight. It's not like measuring out pounds of flour or sugar for a cake. Atomic percent means they are literally counting the proportion of individual atoms.
Okay, so when the recipe calls for 0.034 atomic percent zirconium,
yeah,
it means that out of every 100,000 atoms in this metal, exactly 34 of them need to be zirconia.
Exactly.
It is an astonishingly precise 10-ingredient recipe.
Yeah.
And my big question here is, why introduce this level of complexity?
Well,
because in traditional manufacturing, you know, complexity usually introduces points of failure. Why on earth does a structural metal require microscopic fractions of boron or carbon?
It requires them precisely because a metal is not a uniform monolithic block like we talked about at the beginning.
Right, the optical illusion.
Exactly. Metal is made up of millions of distinct microscopic grains packed tightly together. And the boundaries where those grains meet, that's where the metal is structurally vulnerable.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, if a metal is going to fail under mechanical stress or, say, extreme high temperatures, the cracks almost always propagate along those grain boundaries.
So the grains literally pull apart from one another.
Exactly. So how do you stop that from happening?
You alter the chemistry.
Yes. Every single element in that massive IN100 recipe is selected to manipulate the internal structure of those grains. You aren't just mixing them together in a pot and letting them sit. You are forcing them into a very specific crystalline lattice.
And the tiny fractions do something specific.
Oh, very much so. Some of those elements form compounds that physically pin the grain boundaries in place. It prevents them from sliding.
Wow.
And other tiny fractions, like the boron or that 0.034% zirconium, they often segregate directly to the boundaries themselves.
To what?
To alter the local energy state. It basically strengthens the connection between the neighboring grains.
So the chemical recipe directly dictates the microscopic physical architecture.
They're completely inseparable. The physical properties of the superalloy, you know, its strength, its resistance to deformation, all of that is entirely dependent on the specific 3D shapes those greens form.
And how those 10 elements distribute themselves within that 3D structure.
Exactly.
Which brings us directly back to Michael Jukic in the gallium ion beam. Because if the physical shape of the grains determines the strength of the superalloy, you can't just guess what those shapes look like based on a 2D surface slice.
No, you can't.
You have to map them in three dimensions. And the source text actually provides an analysis of two visual movies created by Jukic to achieve exactly this.
Right. And the process used to create the first movie is referred to in the text as, quote, serial sectioning.
Right, serial sectioning. The text describes it as an accumulation of images taken by successively removing slices of material.
Yep.
So conceptually, is this like taking an MRI of a metal block? Because in an MRI, you scan a slice of a patient's body, then you move down a millimeter, scan the next slice, and a computer stacks those slices to build a 3D model of the internal organs.
That is exactly the conceptual framework.
Mm.
But there's a critical difference in the execution.
Because an MRI is non-destructive.
Exactly. Serial sectioning with a gallium ion beam is highly destructive.
You're sandblasting it.
Right. You are not just looking through the material. You are permanently erasing it. You use the ion beam to blast away a layer that is mere nanometers thick. Then you capture the secondary electron image of that newly exposed surface.
Okay.
Then you blast away the next layer, take another image, and you just repeat the process hundreds or thousands of times.
So you're just peeling the metal apart, almost like an onion, one atomic layer at a time.
Yep.
And then you're relying on computer software to stack those thousands of 2D images perfectly on top of each other to reconstruct the 3D reality that you just physically annihilated.
That is exactly what they do. And what that reconstruction reveals is fundamentally different from what you would see in just a single 2D image.
Oh, so?
Well, the text highlights a specific observation from this first serial sectioning movie. It points out the presence of these, quote, straight features within the 3D model.
Okay.
And these are identified as annealing twins.
Let's define that. What exactly is an annealing twin in the context of a grain structure?
So inside a single grain of metal, the atoms are arranged in a highly ordered, repeating geometric pattern.
The crystal lattice.
Right. An annealing twin occurs when there is a specific type of growth error or a deformation inside that lattice. The crystal structure essentially mirrors itself along a specific plane.
Mirrors itself.
Yeah. Everything on one side of the boundary is a perfect geometric mirror image of the structure on the other side.
Okay. And the text notes these appear as straight features.
Yeah.
But my question is, why is the 3D serial sectioning actually required to understand them?
What do you mean?
Well, if I cut a metal sample in half and just look at the surface under a microscope, a straight line should still look like a straight line, right? Why do I need to vaporize the whole thing?
Well, it will look like a straight line on the surface, yes, but that doesn't tell you what it is doing inside the actual volume of the grain.
Oh.
Yeah. If you only have a 2D slice, a straight line could just be a surface scratch, or it could be a highly localized microscopic fracture. You have absolutely no structural context.
I see.
But when you use serial sectioning to stack those 2D slices into a full 3D model, you can actually watch that line persist through successive layers.
Ah. So you see that the straight line on the surface is actually the edge of a completely flat geometric plane cutting straight down through the entire three-dimensional body of the grain.
Exactly. You map the full planar geometry of the twin boundary. Serial sectioning removes all the guesswork. It allows the researchers to quantify the exact volume, the shape, and the orientation of these internal structural features.
Okay, so at this point in the process, we have successfully used the gallium ion beam to peel the metal apart.
Yes.
And we've built a full 3D physical map of the grains and these annealing twins, all based on the topography of those secondary electrons.
Right.
Which, honestly, seems like a comprehensive analysis.
Yeah.
But the text doesn't stop there.
No,
it introduces a second movie. And it utilizes the exact same serial sectioning process.
Yeah.
But it generates a very different type of visual data.
Yeah. The second movie moves away from purely topographical imaging. It utilizes a technique the text calls, quote, orientation imaging.
Right. And the text states that in this movie, colors are used to represent different crystallographic orientations.
Yes.
And it makes a really strong claim about this process. It says orientation imaging, quote, removes any ambiguity regarding the definition of a grain.
It does say that.
I want to challenge this a bit.
Okay.
Because if we just spent hours blasting away layers and building a 3D topographical model from the first movie, why is there any ambiguity left? Shouldn't a physical shape define the grain? I mean, if I look at a stone wall, I can clearly see where one stone ends and the mortar begins just by looking at the physical boundary. A grain should just look like a grain, right?
That intuition completely holds up in the macro world, but it actually fails in crystallography.
Really?
Yeah. The assumption is that the physical boundary between two grains will always be obvious, that there will be a clear physical ridge or a deep groove that the secondary electrons can just easily detect.
Right, like we talked about earlier.
But in a highly engineered superalloy like iron 100, that isn't always the case.
Wait, are you saying two separate grains can be packed together so tightly that there is no topographical difference between them at all?
Yes. Two neighboring grains might have grown together so seamlessly during the manufacturing process that the boundary between them is practically flush.
Wow.
So if you just take a standard physical image using secondary electrons, there's no ridge, there's no slope. It just looks like one continuous massive grain.
So the physical topography is actively deceiving us.
It is entirely hiding the true structural reality. And conversely, you know, a single grain might have complex internal stress patterns or physical irregularities that make it look fractured on the surface.
Oh, which would lead you to misidentify one grain as several smaller ones.
Exactly. And this is the ambiguity the text is referring to. You literally cannot define a crystal grain purely by its external physical outline.
Okay, so if the physical outline is unreliable, how does orientation imaging actually redefine the boundary?
By mapping the internal mathematics of the grain rather than its physical surface.
The internal mathematics.
Yeah. So as we noted, a grain is defined by its internal crystal lattice, that specific repeating grid of atoms.
Right.
Well, even if two grains merge seamlessly on a physical level, their internal atomic grids will almost certainly be aligned at completely different angles relative to the sample surface.
Oh, I see. So one grid might be tilted slightly to the left, while the neighboring grid is angled sharply downward.
Precisely. And that specific angle of the internal atomic grid, that is its crystallographic orientation.
Okay, that makes sense.
During the serial sectioning process, researchers don't just capture the standard secondary electrons to map topography. They capture how the electrons interact with the crystal lattice itself. The angles at which electrons diffract off the lattice planes reveal the precise tilt of the internal grid.
And that is where the color coding mentioned in the text comes into play.
Right. The computer assigns a specific color to a specific lattice angle.
Oh.
Yeah. So if a region of the metal has an internal atomic grid tilted at exactly 72 degrees, the software colors that entire region bright blue.
Okay.
If the region right next to it has a lattice tilted at 45 degrees, it colors that region bright red.
So the output isn't a picture of the physical surface at all. It's a mathematical map.
It completely ignores physical elevation and instead maps structural alignment. And this entirely resolves the ambiguity.
Because the colors just give it away.
Yes. If you have two grains that are physically flush and completely invisible in a standard image, orientation imaging exposes them immediately. The moment the internal atomic grid shifts its angle, the color on the map changes abruptly from blue to red.
Wow. You know, with absolute mathematical certainty exactly where one grain ends and a new grain begins.
Entirely independent of the physical topographical.
That fundamentally reframes how we look at materials.
Mm-hmm.
We are literally redefining boundaries based on internal architecture rather than external shape.
We have to. It's the only way to be certain.
So let's just trace the full arc of this analysis for you. We started with the illusion of solid metal. And to break that illusion, we had to rely on a tool that utilizes a microscopic cone of liquid gallium shaped by an electric field to fire a beam of heavy ions.
Right, and we saw how those heavy ions act as a kinetic wrecking ball, destroying the surface nanometer by nanometer while simultaneously ejecting the secondary electrons required to map the physical topography of the destruction.
Which is still so crazy to me. And then we looked at the dizzying 10-element recipe of the superalloy iron 100. Relying on this precise understanding of 3D grain boundaries is the literal foundation that keeps modern aerospace and energy infrastructure from failing.
It proves that we can no longer rely on assumptions about the physical world. The deeper we go into advanced engineering, the more we realize that a material's true strength lies entirely within its hidden three-dimensional geometry.
It really changes your perspective on the physical objects surrounding you. And that is the thought we want to leave you with today.
Mm-hmm.
If a solid, heavily engineered piece of metal requires liquid gallium ion beams and technicolor crystallographic mapping just to strip away the ambiguity of its structure.
What else are we misjudging?
Exactly. The next time you pick up a piece of ceramic or look through a pane of highly engineered glass or even hold the complex polymers forming the casing of your phone, Consider the invisible reality.
What completely hidden, highly structured 3D landscapes exist within those supposedly solid everyday materials?
Just waiting for the right tool to reveal their true architecture. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. See you next time.